And welcome to Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants chat on Twitter. Paul is fuming at the mouth. It's a bit closer to the start of training camp.
I am bubbling like the sauce on the stove.
Yes.
2 days till players report. 3 days till the first practice. Folks, the bleachers are ready outside. They got chairbacks on the bleachers, by the way.
And you helped set them up.
Nice overhead covering as well. So there's no excuse not to come out. All right? If you're a Giants fan, come out to training camp. Parking is free. Attendance is free. Legends will be here. If you check Giants.com, there'll be a schedule of legends to sign autographs for you outside the fence. I mean, what more could you want?
Well, you certainly can't ask for anything else because you're on cloud nine at this point. I'm sure most Giants fans can relate. And it's actually been a pleasant surprise. I don't know about you getting in your Nike 5 runs. I've loved the weather the last few days, Paul.
It was really cool yesterday.
Yes.
69 degrees when I went out on my Nike 5.
And today
5.
As well, too.
I haven't. I had a broadcaster's camp seminar I had to do. Tim Capstraw and Chris Carino, the Nets broadcasters, they invited me to their camp today over at the Yogi Berra Museum. And I talked to the students about reporting skills. And I gave them many examples of the many 35 years that I've had here covering the Giants of some really funny things that have happened, like the time I stood in a garbage can to be able to record Bill Parcells' post-game press conference after the 1990 playoff win against the Chicago Bears. So they had a good time with that. But, yes, ready to go. Absolutely looking forward to these next couple of days. It is training camp week, folks. Get the fireworks ready because it's going to be fun.
And we're going to do something a little bit different on today's program. We've been promoting this over the last few weeks. Hopefully you had an opportunity to take a glance at it. 30 questions in 30 days leading up to training camp. We've been running these questions each and every day. We want to get you involved in today's program. So if you call in, we'll allow you to talk about whatever you want. But we're also going to put you to the test. We're going to ask everybody a question to start the dialogue. And then we're going to go from there. So we are going to put some of you on the spot today. Don't be alarmed. But it's going to be a good way to at least get into some of the big storylines to look forward to throughout the course of training camp. And there's certainly a lot to cover in terms of position battles, Paul. You know, at the end of the roster, there's a lot of intriguing matchups
no doubt.
To look at. What happens with the offensive line, young players taking the next step in their development from year one to year two, as well as this year's rookie class.
Yeah, and for the most part, I mean, outside of the last time we saw these players out on the practice field, Rhett Ellison was battling a calf issue. Again, we have no injury updates right now. We expect to get that once the guys get here for conditioning drills on Thursday. But you had JT Thomas coming back off of the torn ACL, and you had Ellison coming off of a calf thing. But other than that, as far as I know, there don't seem to be any other injury questions on this team. I mean, I guess Geno Smith, if you think that there's
but
a lingering.
But he had been working out.
I was going to say, I don't know how much of that lingers because he did a lot in OTAs. He was sprinting out to the sidelines, too. He seems to think he's going to be ready.
Well, and Gino, I don't know if you've noticed this, Paul. He's been very active on social media during the last few weeks, working
What's
out on his
media?
Own. Well, I think you know perhaps a thing or two. You know,
no,
you're old school, but you're not that old school.
No, that's true.
You're not fooling anybody with respect to that. 201-939-4513.
No trivia, by the way, folks. We're going to hit you with these debatable questions about the upcoming season. So I don't want any of you folks to be intimidated. We're not going to hit you up with any trivia. I'm not going to try to zap you with one of my encyclopedic questions.
The 70s
we're not doing that.
Yeah.
So don't be afraid, okay? We're simply going to ask you about an opinion relating to something about this year's team.
And all of these questions are up online, but we want to use it as a starting point to get the dialogue going. So without further ado, let's open up the phone lines. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. You can also chime in on Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. We've got Vic on the line in Florida. He gets us going here on Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. What's happening, Vic?
Good afternoon, Paul and Lance. You can pull me through the test. You know, I've been a Giants fan for about 60 years. My memory is not as good as it used to be, but go ahead. Try me.
Vic, I won't even even attempt to stump you. I trust you that you're right up there amongst the top. You're in the Hall of Fame of Giants fans as far as BBKL is concerned. I would not even insult you with a trivia question.
The jersey is being lifted to the rafters as we speak. But in all seriousness, Vic, all these questions are based on the current team. So you don't have to worry about your knowledge going back a few decades. The first question we have for you, Vic, and then we'll allow you to get into whatever else you wanted to tackle, who could be this season's Landon Collins? And what we mean by that, Collins took a significant jump in terms of his rookie year to his sophomore campaign. What player on this year's roster do you think could duplicate that?
I don't know, but
well, that's a good answer.
Goldman is the man that I have in mind.
Well, Wayne Goldman hasn't even stepped on the field, so I think we were looking for more of a player that was already on the roster that could take the jump, but Goldman could certainly take a huge jump from his last year at Clemson to what he does as a rookie here in the NFL. I was thinking about a different running back, which I thought maybe you would go towards. I think Paul Perkins is a good candidate to be the Landon Collins of this year, given the fact that he played here or there last year, at the end of the year flashed. I think on a more consistent level this year, he has an opportunity to take a huge jump.
Well, I'll tell you what then, okay? Let me just say this, because I got a real good feeling about it. I've been having this great feeling about this kid for 2 years, and I think Paul agrees with me. I think that Matt LaCoste is going to make a lot of noise this year on the Giants, okay? And I think he's going to be one of the best tight ends that we've had since Mark Barbaro and Shockey and those other guys before that. So that's my take.
Vic, I would only say this to you, as someone who has seen Matt LaCoste day in and day out when he has been available at practice and during training camp and spring drills, you know this is the third year that I've touted him now as a guy who should make the roster. He has a skill set. He has an attitude and a desire that should lead him to success, but he's had so much trouble staying on the field. Right now, you have to consider him a question mark. But do I think he can play in this league? And do I think that folks would, if they got to see him, would be very pleasantly surprised by his abilities? Absolutely, I think so. But again, first thing, got to stay on the field. That to me is about 70% of his battle.
Yes, I understand, Paul. And I think this year is the year that he's going to be healthy.
Okay.
Tremendous blocker. Good hands, and I think he's going to make it. Okay?
I hope so.
That's my take, and I wish you guys a good day, happy weekend, and we'll talk again.
All right, Vic. Appreciate the phone call. We had been talking about Matt LaCoste on previous programs, and I love the depth at tight end this season. I think that's one of the position groups to really watch during training camp. And he's made some noise for himself during OTAs. He's been a big red zone target for Eli Manning. As you mentioned, though, it's always the wild card about can he stay durable, can he stay healthy. But if he can, I do like his chances this season, Paul.
During the course of the spring workouts, I would tell you I only remember him dropping one pass. He also had one ball stripped. On a forced fumble. But they like his athleticism. They like his smarts. They like his hands. They like his route running ability. They like his versatility. There's so much. Look, for a guy to be injured as often as he was, as an undrafted rookie free agent, to still be in camp after three seasons tells you that there's something there.
Yeah.
Or he wouldn't have been invited back.
No, I think that's an excellent point. You keep a player around because you feel there's some potential and upside as opposed to just keeping around for the sake of keeping him around.
So they are
anticipating that this could be the year, assuming everything health-wise works out, that he can make the 53 and certainly make an impact. Plus, he's also been utilized as a fullback and an H-back going back to his days at Illinois. So I think that bodes well for him, his versatility. Before we get back to the phone lines, on yesterday's program, you and John were talking about bold predictions, and we'll still take any bold predictions. Somebody has weighed in on Twitter. This is by far the best bold prediction I have heard thus far, Paul.
Really?
Yes, by far the best bold prediction ever.
Because it's so far off the map or because it's so plausible?
Well, I'm going to read it, and then we'll get your reaction.
Okay.
This is from Peter.
What do you have?
At StinkyPete2491. Love the Twitter handle. Bold prediction from yesterday. Charlie goes three calls without speaking about the O-line. Bold impossible. LOL. That is some prediction.
Wow.
Charlie in Portland, Maine, can he go three consecutive calls on three different shows without referencing the offensive line. Is that humanly possible?
I got a better bowl prediction.
Yes.
Charlie from Maine will have praise for the offensive line by week three of the regular season.
Oh, by week three. All right. I may have to jot that one down. I like that one. That's another good one, that he'll actually be praising the offensive line. By week three, you wrote.
Yes, sir.
I'm writing that down here
yes,
in the document.
Sir.
We have that. We can revisit that at a later date. That's another good one. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. All right, let's head back to the lines, and we check in with Joe in Pennsylvania. Joe, what's happening?
Hey, how you guys all doing there?
Hey,
all right,
Joe.
What do you got for us?
Yeah. What you followed up your question, I think everybody in our rookie class, I look for big leaps from them, you know, and even the free agents from last year, you know, Perkins, our linebacker there, the receiver, I forget all their names, you know what I mean? I'm bad on names, but all them, I look for big jumps from them. The safety we got that was hurt and everything, if
Darian
they can
Thompson.
Stay healthy. Yeah, I do. I look for big jumps from all of them. And hopefully, like I said, our left tackle there can make a big leap, you know. But that's his third year, right, coming up here?
You talk about Eric Flowers.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So hopefully he makes a big leap too, you know. And same with our right tackle there. I think there is going to be a big fight there for that right tackle position there. And I wouldn't be surprised if the guy we picked up there, the free agent, does
DJ Fluker, you're talking about? Well, remember, Fluker also has experience at guard, and they seem to indicate,
well,
Paul.
That's where he is now.
Correct, that's where he is. So, no, the reason I bring that up is because Joe was inkling that maybe he'd get reps at tackle.
He's going to get some.
I think he is, but I think that they envision him, though, at a guard as
it
stands right now. Yeah,
Joe, I'll say this. If Romeo Okwara becomes a bona fide pass rushing force, or if Devin Taylor likes this role better than what he had with the Lions, and the Giants can actually have three, maybe four defensive ends that can prove they can get to the quarterback, how much better is this defense going to be? Not that it has to get much better because it's already very, very good. In fact, it's excellent. But how dominant could they be? If one or two of those depth chart defensive ends proves that they can get to the passer on a regular basis, whenever they're in there for their, 12, 15, 20 snaps?
Rotational, guys.
Yes. I look for everybody. Like you said, we do have a lot of depth there, and I really do look for our defense to come together. It just seems like our defense, the biggest flaw we have each year is the linebackers basically covering the running backs out, and I guess and the tight ends. I think that's the biggest problem we really have. But that's, I think, with everybody, because it is a big mismatch, you know, covering these speedy tight ends and receivers there. Would you guys sign up for the same record we have last year and think we did better than last year with the same record, 11-5?
I'd sign up for 11-5 right now.
In all likelihood, yeah, you go into the playoffs under those circumstances.
But I would expect at least second round in the playoffs, at least. I will say this, Joe, and I want to refer to what you just said a second ago about the linebackers. To me, you know, we talk all the time about who's going to make the biggest jump. I'll tell you the two guys who have to make, and I mean are required to make a significant jump for the Giants to do what they want to do, are Eric Flowers at left tackle and B.J. Goodson at middle linebacker. Those two guys must prove to be proficient at their jobs this year, because the Giants are counting on both of them to assume very significant roles. Obviously, the left tackle is huge. And the middle linebacker, even though he's only going to be there on rushing downs before he comes out in the nickel, that rush defense is the core of what made the Giants so good.
Well, especially considering that they don't have the same middle linebacker that started the bulk of the games last season.
Yeah,
so
Shepard's
gone.
That's
more of a reason that you have a golden opportunity.
So those two guys have Flowers and Goodson are the two young guys who must, and I mean must, prove that they can handle the job with proficiency.
Yeah. Hey, now looking at our division this year, we always hold our own against Washington. We hold our own against the Cowboys. It's always the Eagles. And is it matchups? Is that why in the last 30 years it seems like they always have the best of us?
Well, the Eagles specifically over the last few years, I mean, if you look at their track record, they've always had a very strong front four. And that's been a test for the Giants'
pass
offensive
rush.
Line. Correct, yeah. So I think
it's been a rotation of like seven guys, not just the front four that start.
But it goes.
It's
back.
Changed now, though.
It has. Well, because
their pass rush is not as good as it used to be.
But they still have a number of players. I mean,
they
Brandon
do.
Graham, Fletcher Cox, you can't overlook those guys. But, I mean, really, actually, if you want to trace the effectiveness of the Eagles, Paul, you really got to go back to when Jim Johnson was their defensive coordinator.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been giving the Giants trouble, and most teams in the division going back to Jim Johnson. And then, you know, now you have Jim Schwartz, who's also known for his pass rush based on his stops as Lions head coach and Bills defensive coordinator.
And the Eagles always seem to not only get important plays out of their tight end, that's been really an Achilles heel for the Giants for the last several years with a lot of teams, but the other thing is, too, the Eagles' quickness has always been a thorn in the Giants' side during this last several-year run where Philly's basically owned the Giants, whether it's, you know, a Sproles coming out of the backfield,
LeSean or
it was
McCoy,
McCoy before
headaches.
That, DeSean Jackson a couple of years before that. In this time of Eagles' dominance in the series, speed, Eagles' speed at the skill positions on offense has been an issue. Although, I would tell you flat out, the Giants had that game in Philadelphia last year, and I thought, I don't want to get fined. I guess I can't get fined, can I?
No, I think you're safe.
That was a very poorly officiated game. I mean, very, very poorly officiated game, especially on the Giants' last drive when Sterling Shepard was literally mugged about 3 seconds before the ball got there on that fourth down play. I think we all remember it.
That was on the left sideline.
I mean, I was standing right there. That right there, I know a lot of things happen during a game. You never want to blame the officials, but that was a horribly officiated game. The Giants actually, in my mind, had the better of play that night, and had no excuse not to win it. But other factors took it away.
Joe, before we let you go, it's our time to ask you a question. You know, you've been asking us a lot of questions, but we want to continue the theme here. So we'll let you continue in a second. Who is the most to gain in training camp is our question to you. The entire roster, which player do you think has the most to gain?
Most the game. Well, you got to give it to this guy because he's been under the scoop of Charlie's buddy the most. Who is it? You know who I'm talking about.
You're talking about,
Flowers,
aren't
about Flowers,
you?
Right. You got to give it to him. Yeah, especially if he comes through, like, and you talked about, you know, if he just holds his own like the other left tackles in our league, in our division. So, really, he's the guy that's under the microscope and the pressure and everything like that. So, I have to give it to him if he can, you know what I mean, go ahead and stick out, definitely, without a doubt.
Thanks, Joe.
Appreciate the phone call, Joe.
Lance, I want to throw one other name out there, and it's really because he is a total unknown. Aldrick Rosas under game conditions. What do we know about him?
That's a good one.
I could tell you everything about his college career and about what I've seen in the spring, but he hasn't kicked in an NFL game yet. I mean, he's got a lot to gain during the preseason, because he's going to be kicking under NFL circumstances for the first time really in his life. I mean, he was on the practice squad with the Titans last year, but he didn't kick in any games. So there's a lot to be gained for him.
Has to make a statement in the preseason games to solidify the job and prevent the Giants from perhaps going to a more experienced kicker if they choose to do so.
I think they don't want to. They want him to be the guy.
And he has every opportunity to tell them not to do that. And that's why my answer to that question is in line with what you're talking about, a guy that actually has a legitimate shot at winning a starting job, and it's what we talked about earlier. I think B.J. Goodson has everything to gain. I mean, he's got an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
He's staring at the middle linebacker job.
Yep.
It's his to take. Now he's got to go out and claim it. And prevent also the Giants from maybe thinking about other options. So Eric Flowers is a good one. I'm not saying that that's a bad option, but Flowers has already been a starter. I don't know if it's the most to gain. I think if it's anything, it's a statement opportunity for him, Paul. That's more of what I think Flowers has ahead of him this season. Has an opportunity to make a statement and say, hey, this is my breakout year. This is what I'm about. But I don't know if he has an overwhelming amount to gain because he's already been solidified over the last few seasons as the starting left tackle. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants chat. Let's head back to the lines. We check in with Chris, who is in Virginia Beach. Chris, what's happening?
Hey, fellas, Lance, Paulie D. It's been a little bit since I called in over the summer. Good to talk to y'all.
Same here. Good to speak to with you. How's everything, Chris? What do you got for us?
Everything's cool, man. I just, you know, I'm anticipating the season like everybody else, you know, and I'm watching the Cowboys implode once again. Way to start a championship run. I like what I'm seeing over there.
Well, the key is for them to build off of what they started last season, specifically on the defensive side, and then hopefully the offense could take a significant step forward in terms of points per game, because that dipped if you go back to their production in 2015. I think certainly the foundation is there, but it's a little bit of a show-me time, I think, for elements of both sides of the team.
Well, Lance, I was being facetious when I was talking about the Cowboys.
Well, I was taking it back more to the Giants. That's what I was referring to.
Okay.
That's what I was referring to.
I got his drift.
And I get where you were going, but I was focusing
and
more on the...
I know y'all can't really, I know you can't really comment on stuff like that, and I get it, so I'm sorry for putting you on the spot like that.
Yeah, we could talk about the rest of the division. There's no problem with that.
I think Eric Flowers is definitely the story going in here. We know what we got on defense. We know what we got on offense, but I don't care if we had... you know, Megatron at this point, if Eli has to give it to the ball and, you know, chuck it real quick, you know, instead of letting the offense, you know, develop down the field, you know, we're going to be in trouble.
You know, my man, one of the things that could really help out a lot, and I understand everything you're saying, the left tackle is your point man in terms of keeping your quarterback healthy and getting the passing game going. But if the Giants can establish some kind of running game,
yes,
that will take some of the foam off the dogs' mouths on the other side of the ball. And that will slow down the pass rush. Really. And you know, I know so many people are bored with that. They don't want to hear about a power running game. They're tired of me preaching about this for years and years and years. But trust me, if you want to help out Eric Flowers a little bit, you want to help out, you know, this offensive line, keeping people off Eli's back, one of the ways you can do that is run the ball.
Eli's always been his most effective has been when he's had a power running game.
He's a great play-action pass quarterback.
Whatever.
He's a great play-action pass quarterback. And you can't run the play-action effectively if you don't prove that you can run the football.
No, we didn't scare anybody last year, you know, when we lined up to run the football. And you know, nobody believed that that's what we were going to do. Because they felt like they could stop us with just their front four for the most part.
Well, that's what happens when you get inside the 4 or 5, the 3 yard line, and you're running spread offense.
Yeah, man.
I mean, come on.
All right, fellas, man. Well, like I said, I hadn't called in all summer pretty much, so I just wanted to check in with you guys, man. Good to talk to you.
Well, Chris, before we let you go, though, we got a question for you.
Absolutely.
All right, our question for you is, what are the realistic expectations for Evan Engram as a rookie, in your opinion? What do you think he's going to do this season?
I think we're talking numbers here.
You could say numbers. You could say in terms of his role. You can really answer it any which way you want.
I think Eli's going to have a lot of fun with that kid. And as far as numbers go, I'd say maybe, you know, if he can pull in about 45 to 50 balls, and that may be high. That may be on the high end.
Mm-hmm.
You know, somewhere in range between 500-600 yards, 3-4 touchdowns. I think that's a good year. You know, there's a lot of guys that are going to be looking for the ball, you know, especially with the addition of Brandon Marshall. I think he'll be pretty good. I don't like the references that they're making to this guy with what's the kid over in Washington?
Jordan Reed, you're talking about.
Yeah, they keep making that comparison. You know, that guy's really good. You know, I live in Virginia, so, you know, I see all the Redskin games every week. And so that guy's really good. And I think the comparisons are a little bit unfair at this point. But I think he'll be pretty good. I think Eli's going to have a lot of fun with that.
Well, I think those are fair numbers that you threw out. And, Chris, it was good to hear from you. Thanks so much for the phone call. If you look at last year, Will Tye had 48 receptions for 395 yards in 16 games. And I'm not throwing that out there to say that, you know, he's an equivalent to what Will Tye is going to put forth. But if Tye took home 48 receptions, I don't think it's a stretch to say that maybe Engram could get 40 receptions this season coming. I don't think that's really stretching it out there.
Well, and I don't want to put pressure on this kid at all because it would be very, very unfair, okay? But Jeremy Shockey in his rookie season with the Giants had 128 targets and 74 catches.
Which is on the very high side.
Very high.
Yeah.
For Shockey's career with the Giants, he averaged over 60 catches a season. Now, there's no question he did a lot of things for this team. H-back, you know, slot, lined up wide, lined up as an inline tight end. He was a complete player. In fact, Jeremy Shockey was a very, very good player. All pro, okay? Pro Bowl player, I should say. I think he might have been one-time All Pro too, but he was definitely multiple-time Pro Bowl player. I don't want to put that kind of pressure on Ingram right now, but I'm comparing him to JerMichael Finley, and I certainly think averaging 60 catches a season during his career, if he turns out to be that type of player, a JerMichael Finley kind of player in the Giants' scheme, those numbers are certainly reasonable, to be honest.
It's just a matter of whether or not they're reasonable in year one. I think he could get to that point like JerMichael Finley. But even if you go back to JerMichael Finley's days, I mean, he didn't step right in and all of a sudden skyrocketed in terms of his numbers.
No, that was not the case at all.
Yeah, they progressively built upon that.
Because they finally figured out how to use him. And I think that's the good thing for Ingram. For the kind of player he is, he's coming into the NFL at a time when tight ends are being used differently than they had been in the past. It is the nouveau video game style passing attack that the league has morphed into. This much better suits his game. And the creativity that coaches are using for their tight ends, it lends itself to him putting up more of those kinds of numbers than perhaps in the olden days when a rookie tight end would come into the league and if he caught 25 passes, you know, that might be considered a lot.
The evolution of the game. I think that's apparent across the board. I still think between 40 and 50 receptions and maybe between 400 to 500 receiving yards is something that is realistic.
Very reasonable.
As a rookie, and if he gets more than that, I mean, that's pretty much icing on the cake for the Giants.
And I can discuss this with some comfort. I've come a long way from being old school, haven't I?
There you go. See? Because you understand how the game has changed, which you just gave us a dissertation on. So you're open-minded with respect to that. 201-939-4513. Let's head back to the lines, and we check in with Mark in Chicago. Mark, what's happening?
Hey, boys. How you doing today?
Doing well, Mark. Hi. What do you got for us?
I'm going to take a little bit of a different spin on your original question about making the big leap in year two. I'm not going to put it on a player. I'm going to put it on the coach, Ben McAdoo. And I want to, Paul, I don't know if you recall, but about a year ago, I asked, do we have a Bill Arnsberger or a Bill Parcells? And in some cases last year, I think we saw both. I think he sometimes, especially in the Baltimore game, had very creative game plan on the offense. And I think of him as an offensive coach. But at times, they were so predictable. And part of it was because I think of the decisions that they made on the roster, not having a fullback. So to me, that's what I'm looking for, is what are we going to see from the coach in year two? You guys see him on a day-to-day basis. You see him at the practices. I guess what I'm asking is, during the preseason, I know you hold your cards close to the vest.
Sure.
What can we see as fans on TV that are going to give us some comfort that we're going to have a much more creative offense that includes running the ball on second and short and third and short?
Oh, see, I would say to you that you're barking up the wrong tree on that. I think what you want to see in the preseason is the coach trying to determine what the capabilities are of his players. They want to know, how far have Bobby Hart and Eric Flowers progressed? How much do we think Ingram can give us in his rookie season? How much can Ellison provide that blocking tight end role that we so badly needed to see the last several years? To me, this preseason is more about McAdoo identifying what he thinks he can get out of guys. This is not about what's he going to do to scheme? I disagree.
Okay. Yeah.
I think he's got to identify what he's got in his hands first. Then you'll see the scheming as the season progresses. I think this is a very unique preseason because he's got so much on his roster that he still needs to figure out about.
So do you agree with my concept, though, that year two is a big leap year for him as a coach once we get to
He was a rookie head coach last year, like every player is a rookie when they come into the league. He had some things he was really good at. He had some things he wants to clean up. He had some things he's revisiting, and he's trying to figure out his way through the forest right now as we go into his summer camp. I don't think there's any question that every second-year head coach is going to tell you he's got to fix some of the stuff that he learned from year one. I don't see that as being an aberration-type thought.
No, I would agree with Paul. Mark, the only thing I'll say is, I mean, to look at the preseason as the means of creativity, that may be asking for a lot. I think, if anything, you're going to see more of that in the early stages of the regular season. But I don't think he's saying to himself, in year two, I got to make a statement to the preseason so I maybe quiet some of the skeptics and show that, you know, I have a bigger bag of tricks to toy with.
And remember this.
I don't see that happening.
Once he identifies what he thinks he's got in the cupboard during the preseason, which is the time to find that out, now he can say, well, I can use this chapter of the playbook. Or, you know what, throw chapter 5 out. We don't have the guys who can do that.
Yeah.
I'm not using chapter 5. That's what happened last year when the fullback situation fell apart. They had to say chapters 2, 3, 4, they had fullback stuff in it. Get it out of here. We don't have one. We can't do that stuff. Throw it out of the playbook. That certainly limited some of his creativity.
Right. Well, I agree with my original concept that, to me, the biggest leap has to be from him as a coach, because being at the top, that's what drives everything down below. And
that's
really what I'm looking for from the season in terms of a big leap.
I think that's a very fair point. I don't think it's a stretch, and I think it's maybe something that's overlooked with a team. We tend to focus on the personnel on the roster, and you have to take into consideration the guy leading the troops. I think that's fair.
Right.
Before we let you go, though, Mark, we got a question for you. And our question for you is, how will the catches, you think, be split up in terms of this deep receiving core this season? You don't have to give us numbers, but in terms of who do you think is going to lead the way in the receptions and who will follow?
Well, I think Odell, obviously, is going to be number one. I think Sterling is still going to have a big role in the slot. And I think as the season progresses, I think you're going to see more longer catches even from the tight end, Ingram. I think that Eli is going to figure out, once this guy feels comfortable, I think Eli is actually going to use him down the slot more, down the seam, I should say, for those big third down catches. And to me, with him, it's how many first downs does he pick up? What's his yards after catch, as opposed to maybe how many touchdowns he gets? Because I think those will go more to Odell and also to the guy we picked up from the Jets. So that's my opinion in a nutshell.
All right, Mark. Appreciate the phone call. I think
it's
safe to say Odell Beckham's definitely going to lead the team in receptions. I think most people can be confident in that.
Yeah.
The mystery, though, which is a little bit more intriguing, is Brandon Marshall going to be the number two guy, or is Sterling Shepard going to be able to duplicate what he did last season? That, to me, is the bigger question as you try to project the numbers for the season.
And again, remember, there's only one ball to go around, and if Shane Vereen's here for 16 games, he's going to catch a lot of passes,
and he's going to eat into the production of others, too. I think that's a very fair point. That's why I think it's a bit tricky. The arrival of Evan Engram, the return of Shane Vereen, how do they factor in to the reception totals, and how much will that eat into the wide receiving core? Because it would not surprise me if you go back to when Vereen was fully healthy, Paul, you know, he was a top three receiver in terms of receptions on this team.
And so, justifiably so.
And that could very well happen again. I mean, it would not surprise me if he finishes in the top three, which means that you could have one of the receivers fall to four or even five, depending on how the targets play out.
Think about it. If you're a defensive coordinator, and you got to worry about Odell downfield, and you got to worry about Brandon Marshall because he's got that great wingspan going downfield, and you got to worry about Engram, who we think is going to bust the two deep Tampa two, you know, down the center of the field between the hash marks. Well, if all those guys on defense are worried about that stuff back there because they don't want anyone to get behind them, Shane Vereen is going to be so wide open underneath. It's going to be ridiculous. How's Eli going to avoid throwing him? It's going to be, oh, there's 12 yards right there. Just gimme. It's a gimme.
So the game that jumps out to me about your point that you just made, 2015 Giants-Niners here at MetLife Stadium. That was the game that Larry Donnell caught the game-winning
yeah.
touchdown. If you recall, Paul, on that final drive, the Niners' philosophy was to watch everybody down the field.
Yes.
And what did Eli do? If you go back, he threw like two or three passes to Shane Vereen to lead up to the Donnell touchdown.
I think they gained like 40 yards.
Yeah,
on,
it was basically dump it off to Vereen, let him run for 10, 15 yards. And he did that at least two or three times off the top of my
yeah.
head from what I remember. And that made it a manageable throw to Larry Donnell. So what you're saying is they would like to perhaps return that to the offense. You didn't see much of that last season because Vereen wasn't healthy. So it was hard to fill the void if you don't necessarily have a guy that's going to go out there and be a threat in the receiving game.
Well, and quite frankly, the Giants did not have enough weapons to stretch the field and to force the defensive backs to move backwards. You know, you have to instill fear in those guys to make them think that they're going to get beat with someone behind them. That's the only way you get them to move backwards. Otherwise, they're cheating. They're playing forwards all the time.
Well, and a big part of that is the running game. Guys on the ground actually being productive to now all of a sudden force the safeties to think about what they want to do.
They force them up a little bit,
yeah.
and you start hitting them with the deep pass, and now you got the underneath stuff. It's a spider web, folks. How many times do I have to say it? It's a spider web domino effect. That's why I love the game.
Opens things up. 201-939-4513. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Menno. Thanks so much for tuning in to Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Let's head back to the phone lines. We check in with Charles, who is in New Mexico. Charles, what's happening?
Gentlemen, how are you this morning?
Doing well, Charles. How about yourself? What do you have for us?
I'm good. Hey, what about Tomlinson in the middle there? Do you think he's got a shot to start, Paul?
Well, we've discussed that actually over the course of the past week or so. I think Tomlinson will be a starter at some point during the season, but I do think it's entirely possible if they come out in a rush defense first in the opening game against the Cowboys, that first snap could easily be a veteran such as Robert Thomas instead of Tomlinson, because you know Dallas is going to want to run the ball in week number one. And Spagnuolo might just say to himself, you know what? I have confidence in this vet. He's been in the big spotlight before. He's been in the NFL before. That might be a little much for Tomlinson. It might be much to ask for him to be thrust into that spot against Ezekiel Elliott, maybe. We'll see if he's playing in the game. In week one, in Dallas, national television. You know, there are some things that could go into play there. But Tomlinson's going to start sooner or later.
Eventually, he will, just like Linval Joseph and Jonathan Hankins, eventually
started
too. But what people need to remember is they did not start from day one. Now, I understand it was a little bit different because when the two of them were drafted, you had established starters on the team. They hadn't lost a guy like Hankins in free agency. So it was a little different, and I get it. Some Giants fans will contend that. But I still go to the fact that they may want to give him an opportunity to polish his skill set slowly. And Robert Thomas, who to me is easily overlooked, actually flashed a lot last season once he overcame that illness. He showed that he could pass rush, he could get to the quarterback, and he's very good in terms of stopping the run. So I would not overlook them actually turning to a veteran like him on day one.
You know what Thomas does well? He doesn't get pushed out of the way very often. He holds his ground.
Yeah.
Yeah, big guy. And you guys are closer to it. I'm excited. Camp starting, you know, being in New Mexico, and we've talked about this too, Paul, before. How important the kicker is. This is the one position. This team
yeah.
is pretty well stacked, I think, but the kicker position's kind of got me worried.
Well, we're not going to know until he's actually in a game. I mean, I was talking to Bob Papa a couple weeks back, and
yeah.
I said, Bobby, in fact, this was at the rookie minicamp, and Bobby came out, and he had been away at golf, and he goes, so what are you seeing? I said, Bob, I will tell you one thing. Rosas, and I've been saying it since I scouted him last year, very impressive. I mean, the ball explodes off his foot. It usually always goes straight. Tremendous arc. Tremendous distance. I mean, he literally has a cannon for a leg. You guys remember Brad Delwiso, I'm sure. Rosas has a stronger leg than Delwiso.
Wow.
And, yeah, he does. Now, Bob said to me, okay, doesn't mean anything if he misses a game-winning field goal in Dallas in week one, does it?
No.
And I said, you're right. So he's like, okay, Paulie Dotz, let's see him in a game.
Yeah, and that's what you have to wait for. I mean, it's as simple as that. We could talk about all of the big kicks that he may deliver in practice, and they're going to have some competitions to put pressure on him. But at the end of the day, we got to wait and see what we observe in terms of the
skill set's
yeah,
there.
And
the skill set's there.
No doubt. I think the skill set is there. I mean, we had his college coach on earlier this offseason. And, you know, he talked about his work ethic and all of the facets of his game jump out. But once again, we can talk about what you do in practice, and then we can talk about what you do in games. And sometimes those are on opposite ends of the spectrum.
I should add, by the way, and we've been remiss, and I apologize for delaying you here, but we've been remiss. We've ignored Corbin Bryant.
The Giants signed this veteran
defensive tackle from the Bills. He's coming to a different scheme. It's a bit of a reclamation project, but they like him. And they brought him in here for a reason, to compete for a defensive tackle job. He's a veteran. He's had experience. And I think they think, much like Snacks Harrison, who was a terrific player for the Jets in their 3-4, but became better in the Giants scheme, they think that Bryant can be a very productive player in their scheme here. So we should probably not ignore him. I think he's going to be in this competition.
Absolutely. And he's a veteran. He's been with the Buffalo Bills for the last few seasons. Also has some starting experience there. So he should not be overlooked with the Jay Bromleys of the world and the Robert Thompsons.
Yeah.
All three of those guys, I think, are going to have opportunities.
Awesome.
Now, Charles, before we let you go, we have a question for you, if you would weigh in. Where does Brandon Marshall stack up with the biggest free agent signings in franchise history, in your opinion? So this is a little bit more of a historical question.
As free agent, it's got to be in the top five, I believe. I think we're overlooking that this guy's 6'4". He has the height, and Eli does sometimes like to throw that ball a little high. So let's see what he does during the season to really grade it on judging how high of, a free agent signing it was, In recent memories, I really can't think of anybody that stood out. I mean, you guys helped me there.
You want a couple? Well, Deion Grant?
All right.
Really big one. How about going back to the Parcells era when they signed Everson Walls, Steve DiAsi, Dave Duerson, right. Johnny Cooks? They all became very critical to that 1990 Super Bowl run.
True.
Well, I was going to throw out Kerry Collins to me. Should top the list.
Kerry Collins.
Guy helps the team.
Outstanding answer.
In many different ways.
Plexico Burress.
Correct. That was going to be number two.
But, let's see what happens during the season. Because if Marshall comes in and say Odell still catches 60, 70 passes, I think the run game is going to be stronger. But if Marshall can collect 40, 50, but we're talking Eli's going to be putting the ball up a lot if we want the new tight end to get 50 receptions too. But let's see how the season progresses and let's make sure everybody's healthy.
And by the way, let's not diss our buddy Antonio Pierce.
Well, he was going to be another one, and then Antrell Roll, too, I think has to be on that
Antonio Pierce.
List
and
as well.
And I think he's doing a lot of good work with the linebackers, too, during the offseason.
Yeah. He is.
Well, appreciate the phone call, Charles.
You guys are great, man. Thank you.
You got it. Thanks so much for weighing in. I do think it's fair to, at least on paper, say Brandon Marshall could be a top five in terms of free agent signings all time.
I need to see the production.
That's why I'm not going there yet. But I think he's got the potential to be there.
Because a bunch of guys we just named helped the Giants win Super Bowls.
Of course.
Until Brandon Marshall does that, he's not getting anywhere near my top five.
No, and that's fair. Listen, I'm not one to make those rush to judgment type of claims, but I do think based on his resume and his skill set and the offense, if he does produce,
could be.
We could be talking about a top five free agent.
Heck, his career totals are actually more impressive than Plexico Burress's career totals when you stack them up. But we saw what Plexico did for the Giants. The proof's in the pudding. Marshall has the back of the football card, but until he actually does and has the kind of impact that Plexico had on this team, he's not there.
Let's head back to the phone lines as we move along here on Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. We're going over the 30 questions in 30 days feature on Giants.com. Those are the questions we're throwing out to you to spark some dialogue. You want to throw out some bold predictions for the upcoming season? We will hear that as well. We'll get to some tweets here in a second, but let's head back to the line. Sean is in California. Sean, what's happening?
What's up, guys? Can you guys hear me?
I hear you loud and clear, Sean. What's happening?
Nice. So I was going to go top three, but I'm actually going to change it to top five. I believe that Evan Engram will be in the top five tight ends after the 2017 season. The reason why I say that is because, every offseason I like to pick up one of those magazines that goes in depth on all of the draft picks, and that kind of helped me watching the draft and knowing what players was available. And the reason why I say top five is I believe that the guy has the ability to, run after catch. And with Sterling Shepard, Odell Beckham, and Brandon Marshall, taking basically the best safeties and, you know, the cornerbacks on the opposing team, it just leaves Evan Engram right there for Eli Manning. It just, boom, there you go, short gain of 10 yards. Boom, there you go, another gain of, you know, and that stuff will add up over time. So my bold prediction is Evan Engram will finish in the top, one of the top five tight ends of the 2017 season.
Interesting.
It's not out of the question.
No, I don't think it is. I mean, we were talking about earlier on another program, I know, Paul, we were going over the NFC.
Yes.
Because one of the bold predictions that we read, I think NFL.com did this in a feature. They said
we'll
that Evan Engram, I think it was Evan Engram maybe making the Pro Bowl, if I'm correct.
Okay.
And we were looking at the rest of the NFC landscape at the tight end position. And I think it is feasible. I do see a lot more firepower in the NFC that you can't overlook. And some guys returning from injury. But, yeah, if he puts together respectable numbers and he's a consistent part of the offense, it's very possible, Sean, that he can make a very quick, immediate impact on this team.
Nice, nice. Yeah, I think so, too. And he's just so he's so big, and it's the first time in a long time, correct me if I'm wrong, that Eli not only has Brandon Marshall, but he has two guys that he can – I mean, like Roger Lewis, he's tall. He's tall, don't get me wrong, too, but Roger Lewis is not going to be on the field as much as Brandon is and Engram is. You know what I'm saying?
Well,
but now he finally has two guys that he can – he can show that back shoulder pass, too, that you guys were talking about, you know, with Plexico Burris and way back in the day. Well, not back in the day, but...
Well,
like,
yeah, so, it wasn't too long ago.
To put your comment into perspective, last year, Zach Ertz caught 78 passes and was the fifth leading tight end receiver during the NFL season. 78, and that was fifth. So that's asking a bit much. Okay?
What? Just out of curiosity, Paul, can you look up who was five in terms of receiving yards? What was the fifth highest total if you went by receiving yards?
If you went by receiving yards, it would be Zach Ertz, 816, believe it or not.
Both of those numbers are very high for a rookie.
Now, I will tell you this. If he's going to catch between 45 and 55 balls, that would put him somewhere in the top 20. Because Ryan Griffin of Houston caught 50 balls. Kobe Fleener of the Saints caught 50 balls. They were tied for 18th.
Which I think is reasonable. And if you could become a top 15, top 20 tight end in your rookie year.
Nothing wrong with that.
Not at all. I think they would take that as a huge step forward. 80 catches, 800 receiving yards.
That's a lot.
That is a lot.
I appreciate your line of thought. I don't know that I agree with it, but there's logic to what you said. I can't call you crazy.
Being that Odell Shepherd and Brandon on the same team, and they're going to need the catches as well.
Yeah.
Well, they're going to have to split up the pie. I mean, that's the thing. And we don't know, you know, where the majority of the targets are going to go. You know, Eli's one that likes to spread the wealth. So I don't think he's going to have, you know, one guy in particular that his favorite is. Odell Beckham, I'm sure, is probably going to wind up with the majority of them. But as far as the rest of the clan goes... who knows? It could be game to game. It could be somebody that we least expected winds up emerging.
Thank you.
All right, Sean. Appreciate the phone call. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Let's head back to the lines. How about Marcus in California? Marcus, what's happening?
Hey, what's going on, fellas? How you guys doing today?
Hi.
How's things with you?
Oh, I'm fine. The reason why I'm calling is I just was curious to know what the linebacker core that we have. I've been hearing a lot of DJ Goodson, you know, in the starting lineup. And if that's so, who is he going to replace?
Well, Kelvin Shepard was the main starter at middle linebacker last season.
And he's a free agent.
He's a free
agent,
yeah.
I thought it was like Jonathan Casillas in the middle, Devin Kennard, and Keenan Robinson.
Well, keep in mind, when there were two linebackers on the field, which they used a lot in passing downs, Keenan Robinson likely replaced Kelvin Shepard in a lot of those situations.
He's the cover backer.
Correct. We're talking about, I guess when we're talking about the starting middle linebacker, Paul, you and I are talking about when they got the three linebackers out on the field on running downs, that Kelvin Shepard was in the middle, and we're anticipating B.J. Goodson has an opportunity to serve that same role this season.
I hear you.
But when they go to passing downs, Keenan Robinson and guys like Casillas, you know, they're going to see a lot of those reps. I don't think that's going to drastically change.
Although I will say this, the Giants are still trying to find out what B.J. Goodson brings to the table. Last year he played special teams, very limited action in the
defense.
Very limited. They're going to force feed him, I believe, during training camp and during the preseason to see just how much he can deliver. Yeah. And this is the time to find out. We talked about this with a caller earlier. You need to know what you have. And what's the point in not letting B.J. Goodson play nickel at the beginning? You might as well let him try to see if he can be a three-down backer and let him see. Let's see if he can prove that he belongs on the field for three downs, because maybe he does. We don't know the answer to that yet. This is one of those times I tell people all the time, don't always look at a player's play in the preseason and think that, oh, we're trying to find out, you know, he's not very good. This is terrible. See, what happens during the preseason is sometimes, especially when you're a good team and you have the amount of talent the Giants have on their roster, coaches will play guys to let them play themselves out of the position. So I would submit to you, Goodson will probably see a lot of reps in the preseason, even in nickel situations, to find out if he deserves to stay on the field and give him a chance to earn it. And if he plays himself out of it and shows that he can't be on the field in the nickel, then Keenan Robinson will go back in there. But you already know what he can do, so why would you play him in the preseason in the nickel package?
No, this is when you experiment to see if he can be effective in coverage, is what essentially Absolutely. You're pointing to. And just to put it in perspective, I always have thrown this out. B.J. Goodson played 13 defensive snaps last season.
That's nothing.
That was 1.17% of the defensive snaps, just so everybody understands. That's more of a reason why he should get as many reps as humanly possible in the preseason.
Without question.
Especially if he's in line to be a starter.
I think that's one of the reasons why Kelvin Shepard was not re-signed, to be honest.
More of an
Because they want to force-feed this guy and get him as much experience on the field as they possibly can.
Got you. Well, guys, answer my question. I had something else to ask.
Sure, real quick. What else you got, Marcus?
It was about you know, the opposite safety that's gonna play alongside Landon Collins. Well, I know people was talking about Darian Thompson, you know, the injury took him out and everything. But I actually like Andrew Adams a lot. I think he kind of proved to me that he can play alongside Landon Collins with the clutch tackles he done made, you know, interceptions, things of that nature. So he kind of showed me that he can fill that role to play alongside LC.
I don't think there's any doubt. He started the bulk of the season for a team that won 11 games and went to the playoffs. He can play in this league, and I don't think that's a bad fallback if Darian Thompson is not ready to seize the job. I mean, but if he seizes the job, you're going to want the ball hawk guy in there to make those interceptions and to create those turnovers. Obviously, that's what his forte is. But if for some reason he stumbles or physically is not capable of handling the job right away, there's nothing wrong with putting Andrew Adams out there.
And you need experience. You need three safeties. You need four safeties in this league, especially if you utilize three safeties on the field at the same time or somebody gets hurt. So, I mean, Andrew Adams is going to have a role on this team, in my opinion, no matter whether or not he's the starter or the backup. And appreciate the phone call, Marcus. When Dave Merritt, the safeties coach, spoke to the media during OTAs, he said, because he was flat out asked, you know, who's the front runner? And he said, it's fair to say Darian Thompson is the front runner to reclaim his starting job, assuming he's healthy. But Andrew Adams is still making a very strong push, and they were impressed with what he showcased during the course of last season.
He does tackle very well. You know, he really does. Now, of course, he's a little bit more of a strong safety. And, of course, we also know that Landon Collins is more of a strong safety. So it's kind of like you're kind of playing two strong safeties back there in terms of their characteristics. You'd like to have a, quote, ball hawk. And even though Landon Collins had a bunch of picks last year, he's not a typical ball hawk. Darian Thompson's more of that center fielder that you usually think of that's going to come up with a bunch of picks.
Yeah, Collins created a lot of his opportunities last season. Not to take anything away from him, but he's an opportunistic player because he's so active. But you're talking
he's all
about
over the field.
Yeah, you're talking about a guy that his MO is you send him back and he can haul in and challenge those deep passes.
He plays the ball extremely well.
And that's why Thompson, on paper, it makes sense for him to be the perfect complement for an active guy that's shifty and moving around.
What's
like
the biggest play that you can make on defense? A turnover. Case closed. Nothing is better on defense than a turnover.
Does wonders for a defense, does wonders for an offense. Think about field position, how much that changes, Paul, when you pile up the turnovers, or the takeaways, I should say. All right, let's head back to the phone lines, and we check in with Dom in New Jersey. Dom, what's happening?
Hey, Wes. That's Paul. How are you guys doing?
Hi.
Doing well, Dom. What do you got for us?
Good, good. Hey, Lance, I'm actually glad you were able to get on to transit this morning and actually get to work on time.
Yes, the route here will work today, correct.
So, I have just a quick question here. Want to give you a bold prediction and then a comment, and I actually look forward to your question.
Sure.
Maybe if you guys still have any. But the most elusive running rookie running back last year, do you guys know who that was in the NFL?
The most elusive running back in the NFL?
It was an odd statistic I read this morning. I don't really know the parameters or the metrics.
Yeah, I was going to say, I would really need to know the parameters, because elusive is a descriptive word, which is purely based on opinion.
Right.
I mean, I can make a case for a number of guys being the most elusive without necessarily knowing the criteria. I mean, one guy that comes to mind, I'll throw it out just because I consider him elusive, Le'Veon Bell, I think is a guy that fits that bill of the Pittsburgh Steelers. I mean, he's one of the first guys that comes
to
mind.
See, for me, I would identify the most elusive back as the guy who was able to gain the most yards after the line of scrimmage without being contacted. To me, that's
is certainly elusive. In that conversation.
Oh, there's
too.
No question. Yeah. There's no question. But that, to me, would be how I would say who's the most elusive. But there are other definitions for it. You could say even yards after contact, because that means they weren't getting clean shots at him. You could go there too.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of qualifications you got to put on that.
I agree. And I think the answer is actually Paul Perkins was the most elusive rookie running back.
He wasn't.
Last year,
he was in college. Well, he was in college. In college, his senior year in college, I believe the stat guys at PFF, and again, the raw data can be very useful. It's how you interpret it and analyze it that I have a lot of issues with. But the raw data can be useful. And I believe they said coming out of college with that class, Paul Perkins was the most elusive in terms of my definition of all the running backs in that rookie class. I can't tell you about last season, though.
Well, and Perkins is a different style running back than Elliott. I would not classify them together. I think there are things
not even
that,
close.
Yeah, there are things that Elliott does extremely effectively that Perkins doesn't, and there are things that Perkins brings to the table that Elliott doesn't have just because of pure skill set and body build. Very different running backs.
Elliott's more of a yards after contact guy.
Yeah, and a bruiser, you know, in the trenches. Perkins is not necessarily a bruiser. He's more of a shifty guy.
Right.
That's how he gets the majority of his yards.
Got it. And now I have a quick bold prediction. Across four preseason games, I think Davis Webb is going to have 380 yards, 3 touchdowns, and a 68% pass completion.
Okay. Wow, boy, you really took it to the extreme. I didn't think we were making bold predictions for the rookie quarterback. It's possible. Listen, I'm sure he's going to get a lot of reps and opportunities.
I was just going to give you guys a quick comment.
Sure.
Roger Lewis, I think actually now that his case has been dismissed, I think now he will be the wide receiver behind our big three, Tavares King, and Roger Lewis will beat out Travis Rudolph on the 53-man roster.
Well, that's an area where there's a lot of competition if you start to look at what you should focus on in training camp. And appreciate the phone call, Dom. He was referring to after the big three at the receiving corps, you do have Roger Lewis, you have Tavares King, you have Travis Rudolph, the undrafted free agent from Florida State. I mean, those three guys are...
They kind of stick out.
But there's certainly other... I mean, Darius Poe is another guy.
You know, we're going to have to see production over the summer, and we're going to have to see special teams. Those things will play into it. Let's not kid ourselves. They will. They will.
And King and Lewis also have a leg up because they spent the entire season with the Giants, just like Poe has a leg up too, because he at least was here in terms of the practice squad. The thing with Rudolph, and I'm glad you brought up specialties, Paul, and I'm going to go back to an interview. Remember, we spoke to his receivers coach, the former
Lawrence
New York Giant, and we asked how much special teams did he play. Remember, he made the point, it wasn't that he wasn't capable of playing it. They didn't want to put him in a situation where he got hurt because he was their top wide
coming out.
So they did not expose him to a lot of special teams, which means this is his first taste of that on a consistent level. How does he translate that to the preseason games? That's going to be a big determining factor.
Yeah, no question. And, of course, what did Lawrence Dawson tell him? You play special teams and emphasize it because that's your ticket to the team.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you're the fourth or the fifth wide receiver, you know you're not running a lot of reps. By the way, we should also not forget Dwayne Harris, too.
Well, I think he's counting him strictly as a special teams guy. He's not thinking about him as a wide receiver at all.
And
that's
fine. Yeah.
I don't have a problem with that.
And it may be semantics in terms of is he the PK or the kick returner versus
what does it matter what number
matter.
He is. You're going to assume he's on the team.
Correct, exactly. They got to get to 53. It doesn't matter how you break
we're
it up.
We're close to running out of time here.
Well, we are going to head back
so
to
fast.
It does. Well, we're still going to try to squeeze another caller.
All right, one more call.
Head back to the phone lines. G-Money is in New York. G-Money, what's happening?
Hey, guys, first-time caller. Just want to let you know you brought me a lot of joy during this offseason. Love the show.
Well,
cool.
Thanks for tuning in.
Thank
we appreciate
you.
That. So what do you have for us?
Quick comments. One offense, one defense. Players with most to gain during this preseason. Offensively, I think there's one receiver that folks haven't talked about who has the ability to stretch the field. I know we brought in Brandon Marshall, who's a big target, but Tavarius King showed a lot last preseason. And then got a shot at the end of the season. And he's a guy with more straight-line speed, which outside of Odell we don't have. And I think if he has another good showing this preseason, he could maybe get into the rotation receiver-wise.
Tavarius King and DRC are the two fastest players on this roster, discounting Kevin Snead, you know, the youngster who ran the 4.22 in the combine. I'm discounting him right now. But of the experienced players, King and DRC are the two fastest straight-ahead guys on the team.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yes.
And then switching defensively, because I know we're short on time, we have a free agent, a linebacker who's going to be a free agent this year who showed a lot of potential but hasn't really been a full-time player yet in Devon Kennard,
mm-hmm.
who I think is extremely talented. And if he could show that maybe he could rush the passer, get a couple of sacks in the preseason, force the coaches to really put him in there as a regular. He could be one player with the most to gain, which after the season, is he going to be a free agent that bounces around multiple teams? Or if he really shows himself, could the Giants re-sign him and make himself an integral part of the Giants defense for years to come?
Well, and that's why I think he fits the bill of a player that has a lot to gain this season.
Yes.
And not just perhaps with the Giants, but perhaps for his future career in the NFL and receiving interest elsewhere if he could put a lot of positive plays on film. Remember, Devon Kennard, and we appreciate the phone call, G-Money. Thanks so much. And hopefully we'll hear from you on future programs, is they moved him down to the line of scrimmage a bit more last season, Paul. It remains to be seen, is that going to be a similar role? Is he going to be more of a linebacker? Because he's more of that jack-of-all-trades type of player.
For me, the way that you're going to grade Devon Kennard at the end of the season is looking at his percentage of impact plays. Because if he's just steady, that's good.
But it doesn't stand out.
It doesn't stand out. And on a defense that has so many really good players on it, he's going to have to make a bunch of impact plays if he is going to, A, stay on the field, and B, really put himself in good position going into next year.
And here's another thing that I think bodes well for Devon Kennard, because this also gets lost. If you go back to his days at USC, first of all, they moved him around at USC.
He was all over the place.
But also, how many different coordinators did he have at USC?
It's Paul, the first time he's had the same coordinator.
In consecutive years.
Yeah.
That's a good thing. I think that's an extreme positive.
You think
for
so?
You can't overlook that, I guess, is my point.
Yeah.
It can't hurt the fact that this is the first time in his career, going back to college, that he's actually going to be in the same defense two consecutive years.
I know.
That just goes to show you how much he's been moved around and how many different defenses he's had to learn. So, you know, that at least on paper, on the surface, appears to be good. All depends on how it translates, but I do like the opportunity.
And, of course, understand, he's been here now. This is third year under Spags, but he's missed so much time. That's kind of what you're talking about.
Correct, yeah. I mean, the stability. I mean, that's what you want to see out of a player. Be stable,
good
be
stuff.
Durable. So that's somebody to watch as we get into the mix of training camp. Certainly appreciate everybody for tuning in. We held back some of those 30 questions in 30 days because we'll utilize them throughout the remainder of the week. I just want to take a real quick glance on Twitter, Paul, before we wrap up, because those of the individuals that did not have
wrap
an opportunity
up.
To
Why don't
check.
We just stay on until 12 o'clock tomorrow?
We could do that, too.
I'm ready to go.
I'm sure you'd love that as well. I don't think you'd complain.
Well, I got to get my Nike 5 in, but I don't need sleep.
Let's go. I think that everybody needs some recuperation. This is another
especially
good one,
from me, right?
Yes, that I want to throw out. James at lil_TNT32. His Landon Collins for this year is Eli Apple. Thinks that he can make huge strides.
Nothing wrong with that.
One. I think there's a lot of candidates in last year's rookie class that can take some big steps forward depending on how well they perform. And he's another guy to certainly keep close tabs on. All right, that's going to wrap things up for us here on Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. We're back up and running each and every day at noon Eastern, though Friday, since training camp officially starts, we may be moving to a different time. We'll keep you posted on Thursday. We'll let you know how the logistics are going to change so that it doesn't conflict with media avails and everything else. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday right here on Giants.com. Have a good one.